I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. The firestorm involving Virginia Governor Ralph Northam and Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring admitting that they wore blackface when they were students in the 1980s has not gone away. It began when it was discovered that Northam's medical school yearbook had a photograph of a grinning man in blackface standing next to a man dressed as a member of the Ku Klux Klan alongside other pictures of Northam. Now, Northam has apologized and then a day later said it was not him in the photo, but he did admit that he did blacken his face when he entered a Michael Jackson dance contest in 1984. He has resisted calls to step down and is reportedly educating himself on black history. He was interviewed by Gail King on Face the Nation about the controversy and Virginia's 400-year-old history of slavery.
If you look at Virginia's history, we're now at the 400-year anniversary. Just 90 miles from here, in 1619, the first indentured servants from Africa landed on our shores in Old Point Comfort, what we call now Fort Monroe. And while
also known as slavery.
Yes.
Today we want to talk about the racial and racist history of blackface, its meaning today, and how to judge a person's past behavior. We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Anthea Butler is Associate Professor of Religious and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Anthea Butler, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Also with us, Mark Tyler. He's Senior Pastor at Philadelphia's Mother Bethel AME Church, also co-host of Mark and Denise in the Mornings on WWDB, and he's a member of Power. You can join our conversation at phone number 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I have to admit, I am a white person, and I thought in 2019, I didn't think we'd have to do a show about why blackface is racist and wrong. Let me go to you, Anthea Butler. Were you shocked, surprised?
I'm never surprised by the racism in America. And I hate to even say it like that, but, you know, no, I'm not surprised. I mean, I grew up in Texas. I know people who have done blackface and thought it was like a joke, and it really wasn't. And yeah, I'm not surprised about Governor Northam. What I am surprised about is that they waited this long, but we all know why they waited that long to show the picture. So there you go.
Why?
Well, the reason why was because Northam had said some comments about abortion, and there were right-wingers who found this picture, and then the picture was found back in October or something. But I mean, basically, like, didn't he have, you know, people do opposition research on himself so that he knew this? He knew this was out there. He just sort of wanted to conveniently forget it. So I think, you know, the firestorm that has happened is his fault. I mean, you know, you don't do this stuff. But, you know, back in the 80s, I guess he thought it was perfectly fine.
Well, let me quote him again. And this was more on Gail King, where he says, Mark, and I really think this week has raised a level of awareness in the Commonwealth, in the country, that we haven't seen, certainly in my lifetime. I mean, is this a teachable moment, or are we stuck in the past? Both?
Yeah, it's certainly a teachable moment, but it's kind of like taking credit for it is like Donald Trump taking credit for all the women who were elected to Congress.
Which he did.
Right, he did. It's kind of ironic, right? Yeah, so we're talking about it, but for all the wrong reasons. What shouldn't be forgotten, and, you know, while we're rightfully putting the spotlight on the blackface, also the fact is that he submitted a picture that had a Klansman in it. And I'm thinking to myself, how is that not the story that a person who's studying to be a doctor at 25 years old, not a 19-year-old freshman, but a 25-year-old about to come out of medical school, and you think somehow it's fine in the 80s to portray on your page as a joke someone in a Klan's outfit? Where do you get a Klan's outfit? It's just, I just think it's just amazing.
Well, I'm glad you raised that, because I kept looking at the picture, and obviously seeing a white person in blackface is always shocking. But next to him is this guy, we assume it's a guy, dressed in some kind of a Klansman outfit.
Right. And so all of the terror associated with the KKK for black people. Certainly blackface and the idea of, you know, these minstrels and the demeaning nature of all that goes into it. But when you talk about the KKK and the real violence, you know, as my grandfather once, who grew up in Texas, by the way, Dr. Butler, and Oklahoma before moving to California, I said, tell me about what it was like growing up out there. The first story he says in his 80s is talking about the KKK surrounding his house as a kid, you know, breaking out the windows, come out you little black terrapins, and just the terror that this old man, the first thing you remember about growing up in the South is the KKK at your house. So again, I just think that that image also needs to be dealt with in this moment.
Anthony, I was reading about some of the history of blackface. There's a Princeton professor, Ray Lynn Barnes, who's got a book coming out called Darkology, and had a piece in the Washington Post, yeah, a really pretty extensive piece on the history of blackface. But she says, or she writes, that the KKK used blackface in order to confuse the people that they were terrorizing, thinking that they were being terrorized by black people.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think that's one of the things that you have to just sort of think about. It's not just about the, you know, the minstrelsy part of what blackface was. I mean, everybody sort of knows that kind of story. But it's the other part of the story that, you know, you're not really quite sure who these people are. And you're not quite sure what the malevolence that they have for you, and that they would use black faces to try to get black people scared in both ways, not just of the sheets, but of other black people. That's insidious. It really is just absolutely wicked and horrible. But I think, you know, the other part of this that we have to sort of think about is this obsession with whites about having to put black people in a certain kind of thing. And I think this is one of the things that I haven't heard anybody talk about this with black face, but I think it's really important. This idea that you know how black people should act, and so you have this subservient, you know, comical act. You think that they all want to eat watermelon and that they dance all the time and that they sing. And all of these things are designed to put black people in sort of a childish position or an entertainment position, and not to allow them to have their own intellectual abilities to do the things that we know that, you know, black people in America have always done, right? But this sense in which blackface is used to caricature and make black people inferior to whites is something about white people that they really have to start to think about. Hmm. What is it about us that we always have to be on top? What is it about us psychologically that we cannot see ourselves as a people who are both afraid of the other and ashamed of themselves? That's the question I have.
Well, and I think hopefully a lot of people are looking at the history of blackface and educating themselves. And I'm talking about white people here, Mark. And there's a Jimmy Fallon blackface thing on television, The Man Show, where he's doing this impression of basketball player Karl Malone, and he is in blackface.
Yeah. Again, the level of insensitivity, right? This idea that, as you said, Dr. Butler, and you said it so well, that people just don't, let me say white people, seem to just not care about the experience of black people. And the fact that, you know, white people had a whole lot to do with the experiences of black people, by the way. And so that when we talk about, well, everybody, you know, kind of imitates others. Who was it? Someone, Laura Ingraham, I think, was saying that it's, you know, cultural appropriation for black people, I guess, to like sing white music. It's like, come on, stop. It's not the same. And to drag a people from one nation from many nations to this nation, to force them to build the nation, to subject them to another 100 years of slavery under a different name with Jim Crow segregation. And then the last 50 years has not necessarily been a cakewalk either. And then to add insult to the injury by mocking that people. That's the part that gets missed. And so what seems to be, it's just fun and games. I'm just making, you know, that was my hero. Michael Jackson was my hero. Well, it may be a hero to you, but what you're doing is opening up a wound for us every time we see that, whether it is, quote unquote, a friend or a foe, a Democrat or a Republican, a comedian we like, or a talk show host that we don't like. It's never funny to us.
Is it always racist?
I think it is. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say it, whether that's, you know, overt or covert. It's racism, okay? Like, you know, it's also, I want to add one thing to what Reverend Tyler was saying. I think, you know, the other thing that just really grates on me is that after all the abuse, after slavery, after everything else, then we have to come and explain to you why this is horrible. Mm-hmm. Why do I have to come as a professor all of the time to explain why racism is bad? Why do I have to be the one to come and explain to white people why blackface is bad. Why can't you just get it? Why can't you learn like everybody else, like you would always say to us? Why can't you learn it? I really am rather tired of this. And I think it is psychologically and physically wearing to have to come out for every racist incident. And for the last 2 years, we've had to do this. And I'm just, you know, it's really just awful.
Well,
it really is.
And I hear you. And we invited you on the show. Yeah, and here you are explaining
and here I am
to
again.
A largely white audience about
exactly,
blackface.
Exactly.
Well, and can I just say, so, right. And this idea how I don't understand how people continue to miss these moments. You know, there was a story out of West Virginia that just came out where a GOP Republican operative is under fire now. They're calling for his resignation. I'm not sure what position he holds. I think his last name is Porterfield, where he's getting pushback from the LGBT community. And he said that basically the LGBT community now is the KKK of today. That they're terrorized, that they're a terror group, they're a hate group. And I'm saying to myself, like, so I'm trying to think of how many, like, lynchings the LGBT community has actually done. How many churches of straight white men have been bombed and burned out by gay folk? You know, how many women were raped by, just let me go on and on and on. But to somehow in this moment, to think of yourself as such a victim that you would compare anything that's so unlike the KKK to the KKK says to me that this is why Northam doesn't think blackface is so bad. You just, I mean, how do you not get this in 2019? That's the part that just, I can't understand how you just missed this moment.
No, exactly. And I just, you know, it just came up to one thing I was just remembering that, you know, remember, this is how Megyn Kelly lost her job on NBC. And she got a $69 million payout. Now, I know that's probably because of her contract, but the fact that that woman got $69 million because she, and not working right now, because she basically said, blackface isn't wrong. So, you know, and then her other famous thing, Santa Claus is white, always, you know. I just, like, I'm so sick of these people prospering off of their racism.
Is it just, wow. I mean, it's not like, is it too easy, Anthea, to say these things these days?
Yes, it is too easy. And it's easy because we have a president who can do all this other stuff. And so the racists came out of their roach holes, basically. And, you know, out of the roach motels that they've been living in, and I'm going to say it just like that, they came out and they became emboldened because of this president. And I will stand by that until I take my last breath. But that has helped. They were always there. But they have now become empowered and emboldened and able to say whatever they want. Now, in the case of Northam, he continues to try to clean this up. And I'm like, you know what? I don't really feel like, he's like, I want to educate myself. And I'm like, you know what? You should have been educated before.
But it's not too late?
You know what? I think it is. I just, you know, I'm like, it's too late. I don't care. If he wanted to do repentance to me personally, you know, and I'd be interested to hear what the Reverend says about this, take down every last Confederate statue in that damn state of Virginia. Virginia is not just for lovers. Virginia has been for racists for 400 years.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Anthea Butler. She's a professor of religious and Africana studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Also with us is Mark Tyler, senior pastor at Mother Bethel AME Church here in Philadelphia, talking about blackface and what's been happening in Virginia. And again, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe. Let me correct myself. It was Jimmy Kimmel who wore blackface on The Man Show, not Jimmy Fallon. My mistake. Let me quote something that Reverend William Barber wrote in The Washington Post. He's the president of Repairers of the Breach, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. I could read the whole thing, but I'm just going to pull out a sentence and give you a chance, Mark Tyler, to respond to that. He said, scapegoating politicians who are caught in the act of interpersonal racism will not address the fundamental issue of systemic racism. We have to talk about policy, but we also have to talk about trust and power. If white people and political leadership are truly repentant, they will listen to black and other marginalized people in our society. They will confess that they have sinned and demonstrate their willingness to listen and learn by following and supporting the leadership of others, to confess past mistakes while continuing to insist that you are still best suited to lead because of your experience, is a subtle form of white supremacy. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, and that's just a paragraph out of a very, I thought, quite moving and beautiful statement that he had to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it is a powerful statement. And I think I would add to that, I'm not sure, I haven't read the article by Dr. Barber, so I'd be interested in knowing whether he's calling for Governor Northam's resignation or not. I think that Governor Northam should resign voluntarily. Not, he shouldn't have to be impeached, because if you want to demonstrate that something is wrong and that you truly repent and that you understand the gravity of your error, then you will do something that suggests to other people who will follow you how serious this is. You can't be the person who inflicts the hurt and then also helps us heal, which is what he seems to want to do. You know, so I've hurt you deeply, but I'm going to heal you too. No, you can't do it. The best thing that you can do is just move on, and you can go on your repentance tour and do it in some other kind of way. But if you really want to show to the state of Virginia and to the country, because everyone is looking right now, that this is how we handle these things, that yes, mm-hmm. this was wrong then, it's wrong now, and it's so wrong that I believe the best thing I can do to set an example is to move out of the way.
It's interesting, because there was a Washington Post Schar School poll that just came out in the last couple of days. 58% of African Americans in Virginia said about Northam, don't resign. They support him and they accept his apology.
Well, again, I mean, I don't know those people that were polled. I can only talk about the people that I know from Virginia who I've spoken to. I've not spoken to one that says that he should stay in office. And so, but again, if we're talking about changing a system, right, then we have to understand that each of these examples is an opportunity to say that the system is going to change. Talk about the NFL just for a moment. Mm-hmm. Kareem Hunt, who kicked a woman, punched a woman on video, and was let go by the Kansas City Chiefs earlier this year, now reportedly has a deal with the Cleveland Browns. So what are we saying to women about domestic violence? Sure, the NFL takes it so serious that you lose your job for about 5 months, mm-hmm. and then you're like right back on the job again. And I'm not saying Kareem Hunt should permanently be banned, but does that say to women that we take the issue of domestic violence serious? And so does it say to black people that the governor can come out? And I mean, my God, he should be impeached for that press conference. I mean, let's be honest. That alone, that if the picture was bad, the press conference was worse. And the explanation, he does not understand the gravity of this moment, but he can begin by resigning and beginning to learn and let black people teach you if that's what you want.
It seemed like Reverend Barber was saying, though, Anthea, and again, it was a complicated, and I thought, raising a whole host of questions about white supremacy, but mm-hmm. also about, you know, what is forgivable or what is
exactly.
unforgivable.
Exactly.
And I guess I'm trying to figure out how we get
I can
out
help
of this
you with
stuck
that.
Place.
Well, let me help you get out of the stuck place.
Okay.
This is really simple for me. Forgiveness is not forgetting.
Right.
Forgiveness also does not mean that there is not a penalty for your sin. I mean, this is theological. This is very simple. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. There's always going to be a penalty, right? And the penalty here should be that he resigns. But he does not want to resign because he likes his white power. He likes the power of the governorship. And he doesn't think that this is bad enough for him to have to resign. And I think that's what Barbara's trying to get at, is that you cannot continue to keep saying you're sorry, and sorry, and hold on to the same ideas that put you there in the first place, which are white supremacist ideals. You can't come out with a picture like this and stand, you know, have somebody that is standing in blackface next to the KKK thing and not have people think that this is where your heart really is, you know. And so here's the other thing, too. This is what I would, you know, say. Northam's apology was abhorrent. But, you know, he also goes to a black church. What have you
he
said
does.
To those black church members? I don't want to shake your hand after this. I don't want to stand next to you in the pew after this. I don't want to worship with you after this. I don't want to go up to the communion rail with you after this. I don't want to be with you. I know what it's like to grow up in racist churches. Why would I want to be with you? And Northam needs to understand that there is a penalty. Racists need to understand in this country that we don't want to be around you. You disgust us. It is disgusting.
So there's nothing, I mean, besides going away.
I mean, I think his governorship is hobbled. Every time I see him, mm-hmm. I am going to see a racist. I don't care if he says he was not in those pictures. Why are those pictures on his page? He needs to quit and he needs to admit what really is going on. And the fact that he wanted to moonwalk at that whole thing. I mean, you know, come on, he didn't have enough sense, and his wife had to pull him back. I mean, I'm looking at this whole thing, and it stinks. It just stinks from top to bottom. And I think if we start digging up some other people, I mean, if you got some racist pictures in your background, come on out and say it now.
It's a good time, you know.
It's a good time to repent.
Maybe that's why Liam Neeson, you know, brought out his stuff. But, but Marty, you know, think about this for a moment. This is the governor who will preside over the commemoration in a few short months, August the 20th in 2019, to remember the beginning of American slavery. That does he not understand? I mean, what are those optics going to look like with Ralph Northam or Mark Herring, who also did the same thing, who's the AG, assuming that Justin Fairfax is no longer lieutenant governor, that if one of those two men are the face, they're going to be the face of Virginia in this moment? What does that say about where we've come in 400 years? It's just awful.
Yeah, it is awful. And I want to say one more thing about this is that, you know, I want to put Fairfax and Square in the middle of this because it's actually a very interesting racial tableau. You have both of these men, the white man on one side with the black face and the KKK, and you got the black man in the middle being accused of, you know, raping two women. All right. So we've got we've got everything here. We got the you know, we got the black man as the sexual beast. We got the white man as the racist. I mean, the whole thing in Virginia just looks horrible. I mean, if you put this up against what happened in Charlottesville and everything else and all this history of Virginia, it like Virginia is just teeming with crap. I don't like it. I'm sorry. I know some of y'all are from Virginia. I've been there. I got friends who live there. But you know what? It's really just like it's no. Yeah, we talk about places like Alabama and everything else. I'm like, let's talk about Virginia.
Now we know I was the capital of the Confederacy, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. Know why Jefferson Davis wanted Richmond to be it. Yeah.
But here's where, and Anthea, let me go back to you. I mean, here, I hear you. Mm-hmm. So where do we go next?
I think the state that people in the state have to decide two things. Can they survive with all three of these men being hobbled? And I don't think they can. I think for the next 2 years is terrible. I know the Democrats there don't want to give up because they basically will be turning it over to Republicans. Right. But you know what? Yeah. I mean, they have destroyed it. They need to make their apologies to the state party for all those people that worked for them, for all the people that gave money and did all of that stuff. But I'm sorry. Here's the other part, too. Republicans are never going to apologize for this stuff because this is who they are. So, unfortunately, their party is now the party of racism. And I will say that straight up front. So, you know, there's a double standard here. But I think for the Democratic Party, they have to start to think about, is this what we're going to be? How are we going to go into 2020 with these kind of people hurting us in a state that we really need for the presidential election?
And that's Anthea Butler. She is a professor, or I should say associate professor of religious and Africana studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Also with us, Mark Tyler, senior pastor at Mother Bethel AME Church here in Philadelphia. And we are talking about Virginia, clearly, also blackface and all the controversies in the last couple of weeks. But I guess we can go back 400 years as well. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You got Tom, and he's calling us from Malvern. And Tom, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Morning.
I think one of the biggest problems I think maybe for me the biggest is that we continue to allow white people to define racism for themselves. There are too many white people walking around. It's more than just violence and maliciousness. There is an insidious idea that just because we're trying to have fun, it's okay. And that comes from being able to say, you know, pat yourself on the back that you never really felt like lynching anybody.
Tom,
just think that's...
No, I hear you. I appreciate the call. And Mark Tyler is sort of shaking and nodding his head at the same time.
Amen. I mean, thank you, Tom. I mean, you know, listen, again, as a person who was raised in this country, as a black male, I have to listen to black women and other women help me understand, you know, my role in that I play within patriarchy, all of that. And I have to trust. It's the exact same thing. And so likewise, white people have to trust black people in this moment. I mean, as Tom said so well, don't tell me that I should accept it as being funny. It's a joke. It was the times, mm-hmm. right? It's always the times, as though somehow if you were in school today, it would have never happened. And yet on college campuses, it's still happening. So was it the times or is it just something else? Listen to us. We're the ones who carry this pain, who carry this burden, and you have to trust us.
Let me play, Anthea, you had mentioned Megyn Kelly, and I want to play a clip from actually last October. Former NBC host Megyn Kelly saying that she thinks wearing dark makeup and dressing as Diana Ross on Halloween is okay.
There was a controversy on The Real Housewives of New York with Luann, as she dresses Diana Ross, and she made her skin look darker than it really is, and people said that was racist. And I don't know, I felt like, who doesn't love Diana Ross? She wants to look like Diana Ross for one day. I don't know how like that got racist on Halloween.
It's not seen like
she's... So what do you make of that, Mark?
Well, Dr. Butler brought it up.
But well, she did.
Bring it up.
I did.
Well,
I'm trying to do equal time. Yeah, but we'll go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
I mean, you could look like Diana Ross and just put a big giant wig on your head and something flowing and come out and sing Reach Out and Touch It. Everybody knows who that is. Right. You don't have to be in blackface to do that, okay? I mean, you really don't. And I think that, you know, Megyn Kelly likes to make these facile arguments about race and pretend like it's all innocent and nobody knows anything. And I think she was even surprised at the backlash she got for this. But, I want to address somebody who just tweeted me on Twitter, Courtney. Hi, Courtney. Mm-hmm. You're listening to the show. She said, you know, if you don't teach about this, who will? Because they don't teach about this in school anymore. And I'm like, you have to. And, you know, I'm going to put this back on white people and say, I think, you know, this is easy enough with the internet and Google that you can go find out about why these things are bad and you can start to talk to your friends about this. I mean, I talk about this in the classroom all the time. But before Halloween, I always say, don't let me see you wearing blackface on this campus. Don't let me see it. Because if I see you doing that, I'm calling you out.
But if you're saying to white people, educate yourself there, and there's lots of information, lots of tools out there, but there's also misinformation.
There is misinformation. And that's where I think the conversation comes in. But I think, you know, I think for a lot of white people, let's be honest, this is not a conversation you want to have every day. This is not the conversation you want to talk to your black friend about. And I mean, I have, you know, listen, I have lots of white friends. And sometimes we talk about this stuff and sometimes we don't. I mean, those who are close to me know that, you know, sometimes I am just overwrought with all of the stuff that's going on. And I have certain people I will talk to about it. Mm. But I don't talk to all white people about it because I'm just like, I don't know if I really want to hear what they have to say, because if they say the wrong thing to me, our friendship is over. And that's actually a real thing.
What would be the wrong thing?
The wrong thing to me is that I think it's okay. I mean, the wrong thing would for somebody to say to me is like, I think it's okay to have blackface. I'm going to out one of my friends who is probably listening right now. He was in a car last week and an older black gentleman, Lyft driver, Uber driver, turned around and looked at him. He said, I know you have some blackface pictures in your past. And this was an interesting moment for me, because it's like that to me said, this is the distrust that we have right now. Mm-hmm. And I know that person doesn't. But it, like, that guy didn't know him. He doesn't know him. He doesn't know anything about him. But he, you know, he just looked at him and saw a young white man. He must have some blackface pictures in his past. And that's horrible, too. So this is hurting. This is not just hurting black people. It's hurting white people of goodwill who would never do something like that. Right.
Mark, let me go back to you. And this is something that was just in today's paper, actually, a Pew Research study of blackface. Interestingly, it came out just yesterday. And I'll just quote from it, saying that about 1 in 3 Americans, 34%, said that blackface is always or sometimes acceptable as a part of a Halloween costume. And when they broke it down, 39% of white people hold this view, 28% of Hispanic people, 19% of black people hold this view. What do you make of that?
Isn't it interesting that that's about the same number of people that make up the Trump base?
Do you think it is, though?
I'm just the number, the 33, 34% that no matter what he does, the group that he, as he said, he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not go to jail. That's that same number. And so it seems to me that there's probably a lot of overlap in that number. And, so for people who say that they've never heard black people have an outcry about it, obviously that's not true. I mean, Megyn Kelly was raising it. It's, you know, her whole objection is, why can't I do it? And that's what it seems like to me, is that there's this sense that somehow black people saying stop doing that is taking something from white people. It's, you know, you're taking another thing. We can't say the N-word. We can't say this. We can't say that. You can't call a gay person an F. You can't. I mean, what, you know, this woe is me. You're taking all of my stuff. And no, we're not. What we're actually doing is, you know, leveling the playing field and saying to you that just like you have things that are deeply objectionable to you and offensive, that everyone else, you know, everyone else is also a complex individual. We're not these caricatures. I'm not just an athlete, an entertainer, or a criminal. And that we have feelings as well that need to be honored and respected. So just stop because we said so.
Mm.
Period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Full stop.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. No more blackface.
That's it.
Exactly. Because the thing is that if you continue to ask the question of why can't I, yeah. you are in your white supremacist stance.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what white people really have a hard time understanding, is that your insistence of holding on to these things is the insistence of your superiority. And you think that you don't have to do anything because you don't think you're wrong. You're never wrong. And I think,
or you've never thought about it.
And you've never thought about it either. And you don't want to think about it. Let's put that in there too, because most people don't want to really think about it. So I think that, you know, this stance, these people in here, because I actually want to meet the 19% of black people.
I want to meet them
because I'm like, you know, where have you grown up? Yeah. What do you know? And I mean, most of the time, this is about people's ignorance of their own history,
yeah,
or, you know, the Candace Owens of the world who want to believe that, mm-hmm, you know, I need to save black people from the Democratic plantation or whatever it is. Right. But don't realize that we have a tortured history and we can't just simply forget that history. We have to try to continue to improve ourselves, right? But the 90% of the black people here, you know, and the 28% of Hispanics, I mean, because Hispanics are upset when Cinco de Mayo comes and everybody's got a sombrero on and they're all yelling, Epa, Epa, and we know that's wrong. So why can't you think that blackface is wrong?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going for everybody on this one.
Right.
Well,
not everybody.
Let me put it out there. And also, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Anthea Butler, again, Associate Professor of Religious and Africana Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. Also with us, Mark Tyler, and again, Senior Pastor at Philadelphia's Mother Bethel AME Church. He's also co-host of Mark and Denise in the Mornings on WWDB, and he's a member of Power. And again, you can join us, 1-888-477-9499. Much to talk about. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. A lot of folks that want to join our conversation. Let me play one more clip. This is Joy Behar on The View. This is back in 2016, and she's showing her African woman costume from the 1970s. You'll hear her describing the costume while co-host Raven Simone is critical.
It was a Halloween party. I went as a beautiful African woman.
Oh, yes, you ain't black.
But that's my hair.
You can be, yeah, but it is.
The whole point of
why
is that curly hair coming back?
I thought that is me.
Did you have tanning lotion on, Joy?
I had makeup that was a little bit darker than my skin.
Uh-huh.
It's going to fix it.
But that's my actual hair.
I love it.
Anthea?
Yeah, you know, I used to be on Joy Behar's show every now and again when she had one. I liked Joy, but, you know, Joy was wrong. This was also the 70s. Again, I had a little bit darker makeup on. It was a really black face. I don't care. I mean, like, it's blackface, and you're pretending to be someone that you're not. I mean, you could wear an outfit like this. I actually have a problem with her wearing an African outfit to begin with, but I mean, you know, that's a whole nother kind of conversation, I think. But, you know, for Halloween, I mean, if you're wearing it because you know, you appreciate the culture and you've been there and somebody made a dress for you, that's one thing. But if you're just wearing it as to costume yourself as this person, I mean, what is the point? What is the point of being that an African woman on Halloween? What is that supposed to represent? Couldn't you have been Frankenstein or something else like that? I mean, you know, I don't want to be a white woman for Halloween.
I hear you. Let me read a comment from Kathy. Would a Truth and Reconciliation Commission be helpful like in South Africa? Do you think?
Well, I mean, listen, if we're going to have a Truth and Reconciliation, you know, commission, I'd like it to deal with a lot more than just blackface. And we talk about reparations to begin with, and all the things I think black people are really owed in this country. But I do want to say this. I think there's a point to why all of this matters. It's not just about being outraged. Last night I was at the Free Library, and Keir Bradford Gray and Larry Krasner, our public defender and DA, were in a conversation about criminal justice reform, followed by three former juvenile lifers. Just, you're talking about a sobering conversation. Mm-hmm. And Keir made a very powerful point that I think it makes sense here, which is that when most of these cases go before judges in a city like Philly, the judge has to decide within 2 minutes, usually, whether to remand or to let the person go or whatever, sentencing and everything else. And if you're talking about judges who carry these same beliefs about black people that have reduced us down to these caricatures, and, you know, so you can't see our full humanity, that matters. And that's why you have discrepancies in sentencing. One guy last night said he got 65 years for a nonviolent burglary, met a white guy in jail who did the same thing, but almost killed a guy in the process and got 5 to 10. Yeah. How does that happen? Mm-hmm. That's not an accident. And so what we're talking about is not simply just how offensive blackface is, mm-hmm. but it is what happens when you dehumanize an entire group of people. It has real world consequences in how you receive, how you are paid, whether you're hired or not, what schools you get into, yeah. on and on and on.
And it's not even, you know, we think about it for the, you know, the prison pipeline, right, which is really important. But let's just talk about this, about how black women are seen. Mm. Because, you know, this whole thing about blackface also incorporated mammy ideas, you know, the fat black woman who is there to cook for you and do everything else. And so black women get stereotyped in certain kinds of ways because of this blackface stuff, too. We're overtly sexual. We're only there to take care of people. We can't be our full selves either. Mm. And so this whole idea about, you know, what blackface is doing and what these kinds of caricatures do, they hurt all of us. They hurt black men and they hurt black women. They hurt, you know, black trans people. They hurt black gay people. It's across the board. All of this stuff is just, it does something in people's brains. And so even the way, you know, if I speak stridently or I talk a certain way, people are probably imagining right now that my neck is moving or all this other stuff is happening because there's the caricature of the angry black woman. But I can tell you, to point out, I've read all this stuff. I teach it all the time. I don't even have to be angry because I'm basically resigned to the fact that this is who we are as a nation. Mm. And so that should trouble people more than my anger. What should trouble you is that I'm resigned to the fact that I don't think anything is going to change here because we're having to have the same conversations over and over and over again.
Well, I'm thinking about the conversation we had on the show, and like a lot of people did, Mark, when the Starbucks incident happened mm-hmm. in Philadelphia. Two black men were there waiting for a friend. One wanted to use the bathroom, something that, you know, everyone that's ever been to a Starbucks has used a bathroom before they've bought anything or whether they've bought anything or not. Mm-hmm. Is this, I mean, it is a little window that I think people, maybe here I'm talking about white people, don't get to experience. Sure. And we got to see it.
Yeah, I mean, well, just again, if you talk about, you know, Starbucks, how does this relate to this? Again, if we're talking about this oversimplification of people, right. an entire race of people, the manager sees them as you have to be loitering. You're criminals. The police walk in, can't use any kind of real judgment. But again, of course, the only thing we can do to you is to arrest you. Just this entire, you know, the entire system and the way this entire thing unfolded, had it not been for video and had it not been for these two young men being like middle class young men, you wouldn't even know about this story. I mean, I can tell you there are like hundreds mm-hmm. of people that this has happened to in Philadelphia. And some of them sit on State Road jail for months. Waiting just to get out. And their only crime is I can't afford $300 for bail because I wasn't prepared to go to jail today. I mean, this is, but again, what does it come from? It comes from just this, the way in which we just have this blanket approach to an entire group of people.
Let me it just disappeared. Can someone fire up my computer here? Because I want to read something here that's been hanging on, and it just literally, there it goes. An anonymous email. Anthea, let me just get you to respond to this. Mm-hmm. I don't believe the governor should resign. When people do racist things and we kick them out of office, we can then ignore them and what they've done in office. He would be a constant reminder to white people and perhaps all Americans that he needs to work on himself to change. An interesting perspective. I'd be curious about your thought.
Do you really think so? Come on now. come on now. You know, if he stays in office, he's going to do what he does every day. He's not a constant reminder to anybody. Basically, what he is a reminder that you can be a white man and mess up and you can still keep yourself in office. That's what that's a reminder of for me every day. So I disagree with that. I think that, you know, we are too lenient for certain things. Unfortunately, we have not been able to get 45 on all of this stuff, but I'd love to see us, you know, start coming at him for some of this. But I disagree with that immensely. I don't see that that is something that is helpful. I think it instantiates the power of white males to be able to get over any kind of transgression that happens to them, and they can still sail on and make the money they make and get the power that they have and not have to ever pay for it. If I do something like this, I get persecuted for it. I get all kinds of stuff. If I, you know, I would not get a pass. A black governor wouldn't get a pass for this. If he had mocked a white person, oh, please. You know, this is Virginia. He would not have gotten the same kind of thing. And I'm like, you know, it'll be interesting to see if the lieutenant governor lasts. That's kind of a different subject.
It is a different subject.
It's a different subject. But I don't think that these kinds of, you know, blanket forgiveness and let him be there as an example. The news cycle moves too fast for that. Nobody's going to remember this stuff. I mean, you know, it's horrible.
Mark, let me read a comment from Lisa. It says, there are two points to an apology. One is to say you're sorry, and the other is to make amends. You're a man of faith. Jesus talks a lot about forgiveness. Mm-hmm. How do we wrestle with that?
Well, so forgiveness has often been, when you're talking about issues of race in America and black people, forgiveness is that we are supposed to just let everything go, right? Doesn't matter what you do. Come shoot us up in a church and it's, oh, well, the Lord must have meant it that way. Blow up a church and kill four little girls and let's just forgive and forget and move on. That's not, and I think Dr. Butler addressed it earlier, that is an oversimplification of what forgiveness means. And to make amends, he has to do something that demonstrates that he understands the gravity of this moment. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing more powerful that I believe that he could do is to come out of office. Now, first of all, if he loves the Democratic Party and if he really loves black people, he doesn't want the party to fall back into the hands of Republicans, which is going to happen if he doesn't come out of office. He's going to be a drag on that party, and he will ultimately do the opposite of what he says he intends. If you really want to be a good soldier, fall on the sword. It's yours after all anyway. It's not like somebody put it there. Remember, Marty, he submitted this photograph in his yearbook. All the students in medical school, this guy is about to be a doctor at 25, had four pictures to choose, and for some reason he thought a picture of a Klansman was cool. Yeah. You did this.
Yeah, no, he did. Yeah. And I think, you know, the other part of this is that we continue to sort of excuse these kinds of behaviors as though they're just, you know, this is what I call the white boy syndrome. White boy syndrome is that white men can be boys until they're 70. Mm. You know, and black men never get to be boys. Black women never get to be girls. We're adults at 5 years of age, essentially. And this whole thing is says, well, boys will be boys. And this happened when he was 25. Well, hell, he should have known better. He, you know, I don't care if you're 18 or 25 or whatever. You have come to the point in this country where you should have learned something about slavery. You should have seen one of these kind of figurines because they're everywhere. People trade in them all the time. You've seen this before. You should know that either brings a visceral reaction of anger and shame to you, or you're sitting there and you're laughing and you're thinking it's okay. And he probably submitted this picture because he wanted to be just like his friends. Hmm. And so that's a problem for me.
It was interesting. There was one of the national newspapers did a profile of Northam and him, his growing up. Grew up in a small town that was black and white. When there was desegregation, his dad kept him in the black public, largely black public school. So it is interesting that you can have someone who has lived a certain kind of life and doesn't understand a certain important feature of that life.
Well, yeah, exactly, because it's part of that life, actually. See, you know, one of the things that I think people misunderstand about history and black and white people live in close proximity, that doesn't mean that white people couldn't be racist. It just means that you have a comfort level with black people that you'd be able to do all this. But if you see black people being in subservient positions to you all the time, you can stay in a black school, but you still know you're white. You still know that you're on top of the game, right? And so all of this, he could be in these environments and still be a racist. racist. This is what I think people have a hard time understanding, especially about the South. This is, you know, or this comment that got made, I forgot which star it was, that made the comment about, well, Liam Neeson can't be racist because he just had his tongue down, you know, Viola Davis's throat.
Rodriguez.
I was like, are you crazy? I mean, let's talk about the history of rape. Let's talk about what happened to black women with white men during slavery. That's why we all short shades of color of the rainbow. You know, that was not consensual, folks. And so, you know, just to think that that means that you're not racist. I mean, there are racist people having sex all the time. It's a thing. It's race play. So people need to understand that just because you're with somebody that's different color than you, that does not mean they can't be racist.
Here's a comment from Tyree. Says, I grew up in a wealthy white suburb, the only black person to graduate in my senior class of 1994. Growing up, my fantasy heroes were Han Solo and Murdoch from the A-Team. I successfully dressed like that and pretended to be them. It never occurred to me to wear whiteface. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I hope
I think
you
he's
know,
being ironic there, yeah, but exactly. Nonetheless.
Yeah, I hope you know better now. Is this a black person who wrote this?
Yes.
Again, it's so we were talking about that on our show earlier today as well. The idea of, you know, black people, you know, dressing. Again, it's first of all, you have to understand this is not an isolated incident. These photographs, this act does not happen in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. It happens as a part of this entirely large conversation that started in Ralph Northam's state 400 years ago. Isn't this ironic that this started in his state? And he is the leader of the state that we're going to go and remember these 19 enslaved people who landed at Point Comfort, now Hampton, Virginia, where the college is, and all of this, that this is, you cannot take these moments out of the context. And so if you did know better, now that you do know better, you have to act better. And again, this, you know, I think a lot of us are just trying to make excuses for again, as I said earlier, something we don't want to let go.
Well, and I wonder whether this is just a semantic thing, but he called them indentured Africans.
Well, yeah. They were. I mean, so technically.
I mean, exactly.
Yes. So if you want to be technical, Ralph, the first 19 were indentured servants. I said it in the sermon. And the rest that followed would not be so fortunate. I mean, they probably didn't think they were fortunate having to serve as a slave for 7 years before getting your freedom. But in hindsight, but that does not mean this was not the beginning of slavery.
And let me say one more thing. I'm going to refer everybody to my friend's account on Twitter, Historianess. And if you tweet at me, I will put you there. She had a great thread about this, because even the terminology of indentured servitude is very murky during this time period when they first come in. And there's a whole history about Virginia and how this is counted. I mean, but let me talk about this from just a religious standpoint, because I think there's something very interesting that people need to understand about the state of Virginia. I mean, you know, at the beginning, when you bought slaves in, they would even teach them the catechism. You know, Virginia was a very Anglican state, right? This is the Anglicans that are coming in. And so it was a lot for people to just even learn the catechism about Christianity, because they didn't want to teach them that, because they didn't think that black people had enough intelligence to understand the catechesis. All right. So we're talking about a long history that's intertwined with religion, that's intertied with, you know, the government, all of this stuff. Don't forget, Thomas Jefferson, Notes on the State of Virginia. Oh, black people smell. They're horrible. And who was he with the whole time? Sally Hemings. The whole Jefferson family doesn't even want to acknowledge that Thomas Jefferson had a relationship with an underage Sally Hemings. And that wasn't a relationship. It's kind of like the rape relationship. But okay. You know, I mean, Virginia, it's like ground zero for like America's racist stuff. I mean, I have friends who teach it.
But are you letting the rest of the country off the hook?
Yeah, oh, I'm not. I'm saying the rest of the country has to understand that these things start someplace.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, the Spaniards brought slaves in. Like, let's acknowledge what this country has been.
We're going to leave it on that. Leave it there. Anthea Butler, thank you for coming in. And Mark Tyler, thank you for coming in as well.
You're welcome, Mark.
And go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out more about the program. Excuse my voice here. You can send us an email. You can also follow us on Facebook. And in fact, you can also download a podcast of Radio Times if you go to iTunes or NPR One. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.